Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Time's 9:02 a.m., January 17, 2024. I'm joined today by Co-Chair Senator Hoffman, Co-Chair Olson, Senator Bishop, Senator Merrick, Senator Keel, Senator Wilson, myself, Stedman. We have the full contingent today. We're going to go over some of the basic stuff again, just as a reminder. There might be some new people in the building, or some of us might get forgetful. But try to speak into the mic when we have those discussions here at the table. We'll also adjust the microphone at the end for the presenters to try to get good recordings, because there's minutes made of these meetings after the fact, so they need to understand what's being said. And I'd just like to remind the members that the notes will be picked up by the aides and delivered to their committee aide behind them. So we try to definitely minimize the dialogue between the sitting members and the finance committee aides sitting behind them, just for order of the meeting to make things run smooth. Co-chairs request members refrain from eating if there's starvation. We can always take a break. And if you use an iPad, please have it pertain to the meeting in front of us, and minimize or eliminate reading newspapers and magazines at the table. There's a lot of public presenters that come here to talk to the Finance Committee, and it's a really big deal for them. And it's extremely rude if we sit and read a newspaper in public testimony. So that's not acceptable. You can always excuse yourself to your office at any time to do things like that. And cell phones, please turn off your cell phones. And in the room, try to keep them on mute, because your buddies will call your phone to see that it is on mute, just for entertainment. So that'll, continue. Well, that continues the same decorum that we've had here for years. We have, this is the beginning of the second year of the two-year cycle. So I think what I'll do is I'll go around and kind of just introduce people again. There might be some new members or new people. So sitting behind me is Mr. Pete Eklund. He will lead the operating budget. He's operating budget coordinator. David Scott works on the committee schedule here. He sits sitting next to him, dealing with legislation. He's a financial aide, finance aide. And Rose Foley is also a finance aide. All from my office, and a couple of them actually work for the finance committee. With Senator Hoffman, we have Tim Grusendorf, a longtime aide to Senator Hoffman. He'll be the capital budget coordinator for the Senate. Meriden Berrio, the finance aide. She's done that for years for Senator Hoffman, just behind him. Senator Olson. We'll have Ken Alper doing legislation. All bills will be channeled through Senator Olson's office. Kelly Goody's finance aide. She's also, I think, the lead in his office. With Senator Bishop, we have John Bitney. He's new to the Finance Committee as Finance Committee aide, although he probably knows everybody in the room. So this will be his first year at the table. Senator Merrick, Jamie Jones, the finance aide. And she's been here a few years now, so she's getting the swing of it. Senator Keel, Kathy Schlingheide, is that right? Finance aide. She's been here a few years also. Senator Wilson has a new aide, Jasmine Martin. So we have a couple of new finance aides. And for those that are watching at home, it's not readily realize, but a lot of the work at the Finance Committee is done by the Finance Committee aides. And the Finance Committee aides actually work for the Finance Committee, even though they are assigned to individual members. And they have weekly meetings to go over all issues dealing with the Finance Committee itself and help the chairman structure upcoming meetings along with other members of what subjects we should hear. So there's a lot of work that the Finance Committee aides do that isn't readily apparent. But they're very busy and it's a very cohesive staff. And again, they have, you know, their own meetings and their own, almost like a subcommittee of committee aides. So that's very beneficial. Then we have the Finance Committee's secretaries, Donnie Gott. She's done it for years. Donnie, she's back there. She organizes and oversees the room. Allison Wade. Where's Allison? She's around somewhere. Oh, there. Marta Lestefka. She's behind me here. Did I get it? Second time in 20 years. Pronunciation, right? I learn slow, but I do learn. Yeah, and Laura Hosey. So they keep the room running. They set it up so we don't have to worry about anything. We come in, it's ready to go in the flow. And they also spend the whole interim going through all the minutes or meetings and creating minutes. So when you log online and you see written minutes, these ladies have spent hours and hours putting those documents together. So we're going to start this winter along the same structure that we normally do, where we're going to talk about production forecast. We're going to concentrate on revenue going in, which is production out of our oil and gas basin. We'll talk about the price. Talk about our tax structure with Department of Revenue. Today we're going to have natural resources on production. And so after we have production and then we have revenue conversations, we'll have a legislative budget and audit, legislative finance come in and talk about what they see coming at us and what is missing out of the budgets and so on and so forth. Then after we have the revenue and expenditures kind of reviewed, the revenue, production revenue reviewed, then we'll start spending a couple months on the expenditure side. And for the public watching, they're going to see very similar budgets as last year. There's some constraints on revenue and some escalation in prices, expenditures, but it's going to be very similar from what we went through last winter. There'll be some new stuff to get people excited, but most of it will be repeat. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and ask the Department of Natural Resources Commissioner to come forward, Commissioner Designee, John Boyle. And he has a team behind him, and I'll let him introduce his team. And I'd like the commissioner to handle as much of the dialogue as possible. He is perfectly capable of that, and we'll allow him lifelines as he feels he needs them for accuracy. But Commissioner Designee Boyle has been around the finance room for several years and is perfectly capable of having the discussion. We'll have questions at the end of every slide from committee members, like we normally do. At the end of the first couple of presentations over the next several days, we'll bring them back, the commissioner, along with the Department of Revenue, to answer the questions that we may have. So they are not, I just want to make sure they understand they're not obligated to answer questions if they're not comfortable. They can go back, research the data. They'll have an opportunity here in several days to come back, because what we want to do is have accurate answers, because if we have inaccurate answers, to unwind them in the building is difficult, as we all know. So with that, Commissioner Designee Boyle, can you tell us who you are, how long you've been around, and take us through your presentation, please?
Yes, sir. Well, good morning, Chair Stedman and honorable members of the Finance Committee. It's John Boyle for the record. I'm the commissioner.
Excuse me. Let me just stop you there. Yeah, I was trying to stay on script. He is a full commissioner. He is not the designee. So I do apologize for that. It's kind of embarrassing for the chairman not to recognize that right off the bat and jump off the script. But in that regard, I did stay on script.
I figured maybe the chairman wants to keep me on my toes. We need to have another vote after this presentation. Then we'll kind of see where the cards lie there. But in the meantime, we'll endeavor to give the committee good information. So I'm John Boyle, the commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, for the record. With me, I have Travis Peltier. He is a petroleum reservoir engineer within our Division of Oil and Gas. And I also have Derek Nottingham, who's the director of our Division of Oil and Gas. And behind me in the gallery is another lifeline is John Prother, who is my deputy commissioner. So it's really our pleasure and honor to be in front of the committee this morning and to share with you our fall 2023 production forecast. As you know, this is an annual exercise that DNR undertakes to help inform the citizens of the state of Alaska, and of course you as our legislators and decision makers on the trends in investment and activities that we see within the department to help inform your decision making, as the chair pointed out, in your budget exercises. So I'll start off by just saying that Alaska is on a very exciting trajectory as we see more development, more activity, and more production taking place on the North Slope. We are realizing currently a major boom in investment. And I think it's safe to say that we really are starting a new chapter when it comes to the future of the North Slope and the types of operators that we're seeing up there. And this, of course, is being driven by multiple projects and commitments and has been years in the making. I think I don't need to recite to any members on this table the fact that oil and gas developments don't happen overnight. These are not projects that are planned and developed or permitted within a brief window of time. In fact, many of these projects take years, if not decades, to come to fruition. And it's really a testament, I would say, of the policy direction of this body to enable a climate that is stable and predictable, that is giving companies the confidence that they need to make investment decisions, which are multi-billion dollar decisions. And I think the fruits of that policy from this body and members on this committee are beginning to be made more manifest each and every year as we see these projects advance. And of course, it also helps that we have great rocks. We've got the right geology to help support conventional oil development, which, again, as you look around the world for opportunities for conventional onshore oil development, Alaska is still at the top of that list. And of course, the technological progress being made in terms of enabling our producers to be more and more efficient, to adapt to the challenging environment that we have in our state, to produce more oil and do that more cost effectively, of course, are key drivers to seeing this new investment and activity. So I'll cut a little bit to the chase in terms of the highline numbers for the folks that want the TLDR version of the presentation. Fundamentally, what we're looking at is at the end of our forecast window, DNR is forecasting production of around 630,000 barrels a day, which, again, I think when we think back over the years and think of future oil and gas forecast windows that showed kind of continued decline or even sort of flat production on the North Slope, to sit here today when the state is roughly 480,000 barrels of oil produced per day, and to think that in the next 10 years we could be well over 600,000 barrels a day, I think that should help fill this table with a lot of optimism. We, you know, as each year goes by, we continue to have more confidence in our, of course, our future forecasting, right? It's a lot easier to predict tomorrow than it is 10 years from now. But certainly over the past year, of course, we've seen some significant commitments and developments take place. For instance, we've seen some of the legal uncertainty die down around the Willow Project, We've seen ConocoPhillips, of course, take a final investment decision for that project. When we look at PICA, we continue to observe Santos moving now into the construction and development phase of that project after sanctioning it late in 2022. So we become more certain that these new significant development prospects are moving forward. And of course, I need to also point out that our legacy fields, you know, continue to be the solid foundation of our production profile. Decline is a natural path for legacy fields. The resource isn't infinite, but what we're seeing is a significant amount of work and investment by our legacy field operators that are continuing to help stem that decline, or in instances actually see production increases in some of our legacy fields. And Milne Point, I think, really stands out as a great example of that. And as we go on in the presentation, our team will talk more about projects like Nuna and Coyote that ConocoPhillips is developing. We'll talk more in depth about Hillcorp's work that they're doing across the scope and drill down into some of the newer projects that we see coming on. One of the things that we're also very excited about are the new entrants that we see on the North Slope. So, for instance, Great Bear has been doing a lot of great work. Of course, and they're not necessarily new entrants. They've been around for a while, but they are a newer player on the slope. And we're very excited about their prospects at Alkaid and Talitha and the Tulik River units. And we're also, of course, watching the Brookian plays further to the west. So as we look at Santos bringing PICA Phase 1 into production, we're very excited to now see plans taking shape on what will be PICA Phase 2 and Quokka, which are significant, again, new investments and significant new production opportunities on state land that will have a outsized influence on our budget moving forward. And we have a major exploration project going on the eastern North Slope. So, I think what's really interesting about what we're seeing on North Slope activities is that it spans the entirety of the slope. We've got a lot of activity going on in the east. We have a new company coming back to Alaska, Apache, who's partnered with Bill Armstrong to deliver a really aggressive and robust exploration drilling season this year. They have three wells planned in the eastern part of the North Slope. So we're very excited to kind of see the opportunities that they unveil there. And of course, out west, we continue to see that work going on with in the Colville River unit, of course, in Willow and PICA. Now, some of the challenges that we're seeing are a result of some of this great activity, right? We are seeing some workforce, service capacity, and infrastructure challenges to support all of these new and growing ventures. So this, you know, in some ways, this is a good problem. This is a growing pain, but it is a challenge that the state and our operators will have to navigate. But I think as we see success in these efforts, you know, our future will only be brighter. I think overall, the state continues to see some headwinds when it comes to the investment climate. We are seeing companies and investment houses, insurers, starting to pivot away somewhat from maybe what I would describe the hardline ESG principles of the past. There is more of a recognition that the energy transition is happening, but it's happening at a pace that still requires a significant amount of petroleum resources to help bridge that gap. And I also believe that the state has been doing a good job in our outreach and our advocacy for touting the responsible manner in which we go about doing development here. And we'll talk more about some of those efforts subsequently here in the presentation. But the long and short of it is that DNR will continue to work to support development on the North Slope. We are very optimistic about what we are seeing, and we hope the committee will get a good sense of some of that activity here as we roll out the report. So with that, I'll step back If there are no questions specifically for me, I'll turn things over to Travis Pilcher to walk us through some of the technical aspects of our presentation. Of course, we'll be happy to take questions whenever the committee deems necessary.
All right. Good morning. For the record, my name is Travis Pilcher. As Commissioner Boyle mentioned earlier, I am a petroleum reservoir engineer within the resource evaluation section of the Division of Oil and Gas in the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. In 2006, I graduated from the University of Alaska Fairbanks with a master's in mechanical engineering and have spent 17 years working in Alaska's oil industry, predominantly on the North Slope as a petroleum engineer for BP. In my first 14 years in the industry, I worked all the fields owned or operated by BP from the Kuparuk River unit in the west to the Point Thompson unit in the east. In 2021, I joined the Department of Natural Resources in my current position as a petroleum reservoir engineer. Last year, I got to lead the development of the state of Alaska's oil production forecast, and this year I'm again honored to lead development of the state of Alaska's oil production forecast and to present to you. Today, we'll be talking about Alaska's oil production forecast for the next decade. For your awareness, the Department of Natural Resources has been performing this analysis since 2016. The goal for today is to share the production results for fiscal year 2023 and to share the oil production forecast for the next 10 years, including methodology and background on how this forecast is generated. Any questions?
Okay. No, I'll stop you. Don't worry.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Just pause at the end of every slide, and I'll cue you up if there's a question, and then just keep rolling.
Perfect. Thank you. So for the agenda today, I know we talked briefly about going over the forecast. I did want to show and share that this year there is going to be a slightly different structure compared to last year. We're going to do a forecast preview right away just to get it out so we can talk about the forecast itself. This is reflected in the Department of Revenue's Revenue Sources book. And then we'll go into the fiscal year 2023 review, and then we'll talk about the forecasting methodology and approach that we use year after year, and then we'll get into more details on the fall 2023 production forecast. We'll also talk about distinctly the Alaska North Slope Basin separate from the Cook Inlet when we look at the fiscal year 2023 review. In addition, this year we have included some materials in the appendix, which I will not cover as part of the presentation. I just wanted to share what they are. The last two slides, there's a reference of acronyms that are commonly used in industry. This is not an exhaustive list, but I thought it would be helpful for today's presentation. Along with that, I will have the acronyms that we use for the first time on the bottom of the slides. I will try to avoid them as much as I can, so please, Chair, if I do use an acronym, let me know and I will address what it actually is without using the acronym itself. But I thought it would be useful to use that. And then our final slide is contact information for our legislative liaison.
Good. Just remember, you're speaking to the people at home, that a lot of them might be, this might be their first time they've ever watched a presentation on production forecasts. So that's the audience.
Okay. Thank you. Again, for the record, this is Travis Pelletier. Moving on to the next slide, we're looking at the fall 2023 North Slope annualized forecast. This chart and the associated table can be found in the Department of Revenue Sources book in Chapter 6. There's various charts and tables that have this data. This is simply our own internal product. To orient folks to the slide that we have here, I'm just going to discuss the axes really quick. It's going to be relatively consistent for all the future slides. I just wanted to make sure we have that covered. On the y-axis, what we're going to show is the fiscal year annual average daily oil production. For this particular slide, that range is going to go from 0 to 1 million barrels of oil per day. On the x-axis, we have the years listed. These are fiscal years. I know it's not listed as fiscal year, but these are fiscal years listed to be consistent with what's in the Department of Revenue Sources book. Now, within the slide itself, or should say within the chart itself, we have what we can see is a number of line charts. We have the official forecast. This is, again, what you can find in the Revenue Sources book. And then along with that, we have both a high and a low forecast. So what we do every year when we put a forecast together is we not only do we want to put together a forecast that is our expectation, we want to bracket that. So make sure that we are giving you a realistic range of expectations on how future production and future production projects might materialize, given the uncertainties that are present in oil field development. Along with that, we have charted up the aggregates. Every year we also, through operator interviews, ask the operators of all the North Slope producing fields for their own internal expectations. We summarize that every year, so we just take the total North Slope and we plot it up here on this chart as well. One distinction between the official forecast and the operator chart is the operator chart does not include future projects. So things like Willow, things like Pikka, are not included in the operator forecast. So that is only for existing fields. So that's why you see a relative, narrow difference in the early years. And then as you have these large development projects start online in future years, which we'll share more details of later, you start to see the divergence of the official forecast and the operator forecast.
Done with the slide?
Yes.
So maybe going forward, you could help the committee because all oil is not equal, and we're getting more and more oil being impacted by the gross value reduction in the calculation, which is kind of a revenue issue. But it would be helpful for the committee to see you guys delineate the barrels that are impacted by that, because that has a significant net revenue change to the committee when we look at our budget. Also, we need to keep in mind, with all oil is not equal, the royalty ownership and the royalty differences. And that's kind of your guys' bailiwick. So I'd like you to emphasize that along the way, because there is a significant difference to the state treasury depending on who owns the subsurface. And the surface, frankly.
For the chair, for the record, Travis Peltier. Yes, sir, we'll do that in the future. So let's take a look at fiscal year 2023 in review. So basically what we do every year is, we put together a forecast, but we like to ask ourselves, how did we do? What is the range of expectations? I'm going to orient folks to the chart really quick so I can explain the bullets in a minute. So the chart on the right, the y-axis, again, is the fiscal year annual average daily oil production in barrels of oil per day, or BOPD. The range on this is now from 0 to 600,000. And what we have here is the bar chart with the Department of Revenue, Revenue Sources book, high number just for fiscal year 2023 as forecasted in fiscal year 2022 is our upper band. I'm going to switch over to the far, not quite the far right, but the right blue, where's the DOR, sorry, the Department of Revenue, Revenue Sources book, low band. And then the official forecast that we provided again last year is the bright blue Department of Revenue official forecast at about 491,727 barrels. In fiscal year 2023, actual production from the North Slope was actually 479,380 barrels. So what we strive to do every year is we, of course, would like to have the exact actual production match the official forecast. It's very challenging to do. For that, we have a range of acceptability of within the high and the low forecast. It's roughly plus or minus 5% is what we're targeting. And it turns out our official forecast was about 3% higher than actual forecast for fiscal year 2023. I think you saw on the previous slide, we also include an operator forecast aggregate. And last year, the operator forecast itself was 482,461. So it was still higher, but it was indeed closer than ours to what the actual production was. There are a few things I did want to hit on this. Commissioner Boyle had already kind of mentioned that we do see some positive factors shaping our forecast horizon for the future. As he mentioned, the return of Apache to Alaska combined with Armstrong exploration on the North Slope is a really good positive indicator we see around industry interest expanding in the Brookian Age plays across the North Slope. You also see that with the final investment decision of the Willow project from ConocoPhillips, along with the continued development of the Pikka project with Santos. These are all Brookian aged plays that are being targeted. So there's a lot of industry interest that's really good for our long-term future. There are, however, some challenges, as Commissioner Boyle mentioned as well. We do see, and we've heard conversations about, ESG influences continuing to challenge capital allocation decisions within Alaska. However, companies and investors are all adapting, and I think they all see the resource potential that exists up here. So I think there is a bright future ahead. We do, however, also see, you know, federal regulatory changes and leasing restrictions that have presented some challenges. There might be a little more on that later I share when we show a map of future projects, just as an example of that. I'll cover that in a future slide. Before we move on to just to address why we did have some shortfalls as well. So again, we'd mentioned that DNR's forecast production was 3% higher than fiscal year 2023. And there was a few themes that led to this. You know, we did have a couple of our fields have some production challenges where two fields are predominantly driven by the production from one or two wells only. So when those one or two wells go down, you have production challenges associated with that. Along with that, we did have some development drilling in some of the fields that we had expected to produce more than they actually did. So those were the two major themes that we noticed during fiscal year 2023 and why our fall 2022 forecast was overpredicted.
Right.
Okay. So taking a look at the North Slope specifically itself for the fiscal year 2023 and just looking at the highlights. One thing I do want to address, last year I did try on the charts down below to use the revenue sources book production areas. This year we switched back to the fields themselves for clarity. So I just wanted to highlight that change before I talk about the rest of this slide. So for fiscal year 23 versus fiscal year 2022, what we typically expect on a producing oil field is decline year after year. I'm going to highlight the top right chart really quick. Again, this axis is consistent with what we've had on previous charts, fiscal year annual average daily oil production in barrels of oil per day. The range on this is 0 to 600,000 barrels of oil per day. And again, the fiscal years are listed for 2017 through 2023. And what you see in 2017 is a high production year on this chart of around 526,400 barrels of oil per day. And then it declines through time, and we do get down to, in 2023, 479,380 barrels of oil per day. So you see decline through time of our largest fields, such as Prudhoe Bay and Kuparuk River. You know, they've been online, they've been producing for many decades. And so this is the type of natural decline you expect to see in a mature basin such as the North Slope. Compared to fiscal year 2022, however, in fiscal year 2023, North Slope production actually ticked up. So officially, it was around 2,890 barrels of oil per day increased from fiscal year 2022, and that shows the positive effect of continued investment within even our existing oil fields. So I'm going to talk now onto the chart, and my hope here is that as we go through the chart on the bottom where it says production changes across the North Slope assets, I have some bullets as well on the left that say decreases and increases. So as I talk through the chart, it should match up with the bullets as well. The chart is arranged alphabetically. There's no rhyme or reason to it other than that. So it's just arranged alphabetically, both on the decreases and then the increases. So taking a look at this bottom right chart, the axis here does change. This is a waterfall chart. So it goes from average yearly oil production difference, starts at zero, and it's accumulative after each one. So that's why all the decreases, you know, drop the production value down in terms of where we lost production in various fields. And then on the increases, we get to that net positive 2,890 barrels on the far right. So taking a look at the individual fields themselves, we start off with Badami. This is one of the fields where the best producing well was offline for much of fiscal year 2023. It did come back online in May of 2023, which is right towards the end of fiscal year. So we'll see how this plays out over fiscal year 2024, but there was a decrease in Badami from that. The Colville River and Kuparuk River units are operated by ConocoPhillips, mostly on state lands. Colville River does have some mixed acreage, and they did have production declines associated with natural decline. However, that was offset with development drilling that has returned to many areas of the North Slope. The Endicott and North Star fields are next. They're operated by Hillcorp Alaska. And they experience natural reservoir decline. And then Point Thompson is one to highlight here. This is one where there's a single producing well for the entire field, and it had some severe production challenges that materialized towards the end of the fiscal year 2023, and those production challenges do continue into fiscal year 2024. On the increases, when we take a look at what's going well from a production increase standpoint, the greater Moose's Tooth unit, there's a new pad that was developed out there. First oil was in November of 2021, and pad development continues on with the greater Moose's Tooth unit on the GMT2 pad. That's the name of the pad is GMT2. For the Milne Point, Nikaichek, and Gurik units, you know, these units all had production growth predominantly driven by either infill drilling work, so a rig drilling new wells, or rig workovers fixing broken wells. So more activity out there from the operator continuing to increase their field production rates. And then Prudhoe Bay as well had production growth year on year from improved facility reliability and increased gas throughput in the winter. So the current operator, Hillcorp Alaska, has done a lot to optimize this field and get as much production out of the existing asset as they can. We are going to talk more about Greater Moose's Tooth later on, but I did want to highlight that while this is a positive story in terms of production growth, we did have some expectations that production growth would be higher than it actually was. So when we take a look at one of our future charts, and the question might naturally come up, you know, why is production less in fiscal year 24 than we had expected even last year? One of the large drivers of that is GMT2 pad for our internal expectations. Did not materialize as we expected it to.
Are you done with the slide?
Yes.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Peltier, can you expand on bullet number 3 under increases? I'm curious, and I'll tell you where my curiosity is if you've got any more technical information on this gas throughput. Is that from more infield drilling, just handling more gas, or is it more efficiencies with compressors, or that kind of, that's my question.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, what I can tell you is I think it's the gas throughput has more to do with the compressor than it does to do with the wells themselves. I know Hillcorp has done a lot so Prudhoe Bay, if I take it a step back, if that's okay, Prudhoe Bay is predominantly driven on production from gas throughput and water throughput. And the largest current fluid that is actually handled in Prudhoe Bay is gas, by far. And so the more the operator can do to handle the gas, the more oil you're going to naturally get with that extra gas production. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So can you talk a little bit about 24? This, you got FY23, and we're halfway through FY24. And what does 24 look like?
Senator,
you know offhand.
Chair Stedman, for the record, Travis Peltier. Yeah, can we share that on a later slide?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I think slide 15 or 14 has the charts where we can take a look at fiscal year 24 specifically.
And then I'd like you to get back to the committee on the processing, the 9 processing facilities, and their capacities and constraints. We haven't had that updated in quite a few years, and you touched on it a few minutes ago, the constraints of processing gas or water if it's caporic. So we can take a look at those. So go ahead and continue.
Again, for the record, Travis Peltier. Focusing on the North Slope still, we wanted to highlight for you, there's more than 5 projects, but we wanted to highlight 5 key projects that we see coming to the North Slope. And these can be broken into 2 tranches. The top 2 projects are actually big, brand new fields, large capital investments. So Pikka, operated by Santos on state lands, Willow, operated by ConocoPhillips on federal lands, are both multi-billion-dollar investments within the state of Alaska that have gone through final investment decision. And then I think the bottom 3 projects are equally as exciting. These are projects that you see within existing oil fields, such as the Colville River Unit, Milne Point Unit, and the Kaparik River Unit. And these are brand new pads being brought online, being developed and brought online, or the expansion of existing pads. And we'll talk more about these in details, but these are some projects that are going to be coming online that do have a very material impact on the production forecast for this year. As we go through this, I'll try to also continue to highlight state versus federal lands as well. So if I forget, please remind me.
You might want to tell the public why we'd even care.
For state versus federal lands?
Yes.
Again, for the record, Travis Peltier, the distinction between state and federal lands has to do with, maybe I should actually kick this off to one of my lifelines here in a minute, but I'll try to answer it. has to do with how much revenue the state of Alaska gets. So they're treated differently. And I think with that, I might hand it over to Director Nottingham to more fully answer this one.
Mr. Nottingham, could you help us with royalties and why we should pay attention to that?
Sure. For the record, I'm Derek Nottingham. One second. Derek Nottingham, the director of the Division of Oil and Gas. I'm through the chair. So state lands, the royalty is different. The revenue that the state collects is roughly, on average, about 12.5% from the North Slope, give or take some. When you move into federal lands, it gets quite a bit different. On the west side, in the NPRA, the state does not receive any direct revenue from royalty. We do collect production taxes, but the federal government receives 50% of the royalty in NPRA, and the local communities also get an allotment of about 50% of those royalties. On the east side in Anwar, where there is no production, the state would receive 50% of the royalties there, whereas in the federal government received 50% of the royalty. So it matters greatly where the production is coming from as to what the royalty percentage and amount of revenue coming in will be for the state. So for instance, PICA is on state land. It has a mix of 12.5%, I believe some 16 2/3 royalty interest. We can get back to the committee on that. Willow is all on NPRA, so the state will receive no direct royalty on those projects, on that project.
Okay, go ahead and continue.
For the record, Travis Peltier. So for the rest of this slide, I was going to cover the status of the various projects and go through this line by line. So again, PICA, the development by Santos on the state lands of the Alaska North Slope. Last year, when we talked to this committee, this project had been through a final investment decision, and first oil was anticipated in 2026. Fast forward 1 year to now, and what is going on the North Slope is project construction and drilling activities are ongoing. And Project First Oil is still anticipated in 2026, more specifically the second quarter of 2026. Peak design capacity and rate for the first phase is 80,000 barrels a day is the expectation. For the Willow project operated by the ConocoPhillips, operated by ConocoPhillips on the National Petroleum Reserve of Alaska, so again on federal land here, last year it was awaiting a record of decision from the Bureau of Land Management for a supplemental environmental impact statement. And ConocoPhillips had stated that the final investment decision could not be made prior to that record of decision being released. Once final investment decision was made, first oil is expected 6 years after that if approved. Fast forward 1 year, there's been a lot that's happened with Willow in the past years, or in the past year. The BLM record of decision on the supplemental environmental impact statement was issued in 2023, and Conoco started production or construction activities in April of 2023. They also committed to a final investment decision in December of 2023, and first oil is still expected 6 years after FID, final investment decision. Peak rate for this one is expected to be around 180,000 barrels of oil per day. The Colville River Unit Narwhal CD8 project. So again, this is going from large new fields back to new pads within a field. The CD8 project last year was expected to commence production around in 2028. However, it was pending stakeholder alignment, permitting, internal studies, and internal alignment. And this was consistent with what was released in 2021. Fast forward a year, this project timeline has shifted to 2030. So first oil is now expected then. That's with the 25th Colville River Unit Plan of Development that was submitted in 2023. It's still pending stakeholder alignment, permitting, and internal studies and alignments as well before this one gets moving forward. However, we have our internal estimate for this project at around 32,000 barrels a day. The last two projects for Milne Point Raven Pad, these are more short-term projects than the CD8. Milne Point Raven Pad is operated by Hillcorp. It's also called RPAD. So if you hear RavenPad or RPAD, they are synonymous. In November of 2022, Hillcorp had applied for approval to construct the new pad. And this past year, in February of 2023, DNR granted that approval, and construction activities are currently ongoing. The DNR has an internal estimate for this one of about 10,000 barrels a day, and we expect this production to be analogous to the most recent new pad at Milne Point called MPAD or Moose Pad. It's just called MPAD now, but it used to be called Moose Pad once upon a time. So if you hear either, they're also synonymous. And then for the last project to highlight here within the Colville River unit, the Kuparuk River unit, is the Nuna Torok project on state land operated by ConocoPhillips. In 2022, the Kuparuk River unit operator Conoco planned on drilling some injector producer pairs to appraise this for a future development. And if you fast forward to now and what's happened over the past 12 months, Conoco has fully funded this project in 2023. And subsequently applied for, and the Department of Natural Resources approved, Drill Site 3T expansion. So Drill Site 3T is where the Nuna Torok project will be for future wells as well. Construction activities are ongoing, and first oil for this is expected in 2025, with a peak rate of 20,000 barrels of oil per day.
Keep going.
All right. So we're going to pivot here to the Cook Inlet now, so going to our basin here in the south central area. Again, taking a look at highlights from fiscal year 2023 versus fiscal year 2022. The Cook Inlet base has been online and producing for a very long time, since the late 1950s. And so we expect to see, you know, in these, again, mature fields, year-on-year production decline. If we take a look at the chart on the right, you can see that we have the same axis labeled fiscal year annual average daily oil production barrels of oil per day, from 0 to 20,000 barrels a day. And, you know, we do have the peak rate listed here happens in fiscal year 2018 at 15,653. And we've seen production decline since then to the low point here in fiscal year 2023 at 9,033 barrels. Compared to fiscal year 2022, the Cook Inlet production did decrease by about 4% or 370 barrels. Oil from the Cook Inlet is pretty important for the South Central area. Aviation fuels are sourced from this Cook Inlet Cook Inlet oil. So we do want to make sure we continue to have a robust oil industry in the South Central area. If we take a look at the chart on the bottom, again, this is the same waterfall style of a chart where you have the average yearly production change now. So this will be a cumulative chart, with the orange being the decreases and the blues being the increases on the field, yielding that approximately 370 barrel of oil per day decrease year on year. And if we take a look at the Beaver Creek units, Granite Point, Hanson, MacArthur River, and Swanson River, these are all what we'd expect to see with some natural decline in the fields. The Redoubt Shoal unit did have natural decline, but that was partially offset with some rate adding well work that was performed in the unit itself. On the increases with Trading Bay and MacArthur River, there were some rate adding well work that actually yielded positive increases to the field production year on year. All right. Seeing no questions, I'm going to move on to the DNR Fall 2023 production forecasting approach. So I think last year when we came, I had shared that we made some changes from years prior. We, the DNR, adopted a methodology where we became more explicit on our drilling activity for both the North Slope and the Cook Inlet. We kept that methodology unchanged from last year to this year. So no changes at all in methodology. And with that, I'm going to move on to how we put these forecasts together. So every year, the Division of Oil and Gas performs a bottoms-up decline analysis on all of the pools that are available within the AOGCC publicly available data as of June 30th of 2023. For last year, that included 38 North Slope fields, and then the Cook Inlet has more pools, but we treat it as one pool when we provide the information to the Department of Revenue. So if you do recall, last year we actually had 38 pools in total. And so one of the positive stories that we see from last year to this year is, again, within the Kuparuk River unit, the development of a new pool called Coyote. So that wasn't there last year, and we had it for this year. And so it's really good to see, I think, the continued investment that we see from our operators on the slope, bringing new oil fields online. So every year, the Division of Oil and Gas also interacts with the operators of the various projects under development and the fields that are online and producing. We do that through both in-person and in-writing interviews, so try to get as much up-to-date information as possible to put the production forecast together as we can, so you have the best information available to make decisions. When that process was completed, we ended up with 15 projects that were under development or under evaluation. We'll have a list of that on the next two slides from now. We'll go over what those projects are in total on the North Slope. And these projects do use confidential information from the operator, so we can't necessarily share the information with the public, but we can share it in aggregate. We'll do the best we can to get you the information you need if you do have specific questions. For these new projects that are under development, the risks of a new development are higher than they are for an existing pool. So we risk them for scope, we risk them for the chance they will actually occur, and we do provide a range of start dates because a project that's 10 years out, maybe it starts in 9 years, maybe it starts in 11 years. There's a lot of uncertainty in that, so we do put a range of start dates on that as well. Moving on to the next slide here, to categories of production. So now that we talked about how do we build the bottoms-up forecast among the existing pools and the projects, we also differentiate these between current production, so production within existing pools, within existing fields, that takes no additional capital, but it does take operating costs to continue to maintain these fields. You know, we take into account well and facility uptime with current production. We do take into account changes in reservoir management that we expect with their existing fields, and those all get lumped into what we call the current production category. So effectively, you have to be a well drilled on or before June 30th of 2023 to be in this category. If you're put on production on July 1st, 2023 or later, you're going to be in under development. And if you're online in July 1st, 2025 and later, sorry, 2024 and later, you're in under evaluation. So it's just a date differentiation for the projects under development and under evaluation. We do, for these two as well, we do have it's a difference of within an existing field, you can have what we call infill drilling, where you put new capital in. And again, if you're within the next 12 months, you could be under development. But it's same if you're within an existing field outside of the 12-month window. If you're months 13 through 120 or years 2 through 10, you're going to be in the under evaluation category. By their very nature, the large investment projects we talked about on the previous slide, you know, Willow, Pica, those are also going to be on production in the future years beyond the next fiscal year. So those are all by nature under evaluation. As we get closer to their anticipated first oil date, however, you know, when I'm here in 2 years and we discuss Pica, you know, hopefully we get to move that one to under development. So that's where all the big projects are going to be, is in the under evaluation wedge when we see it in the future slides. So let's take a look at, on a map, where are the under evaluation projects? Where are the large projects for the North Slope? And before we talk about where they're at, let's take a look at the general characteristics of what defines these under evaluation projects. So to be defined as something in the future under evaluation, you cannot be online by the end of the fiscal year. So if you were online on or before June 30th, 2023, you're in current production. You're not in this category. So these are all future projects from our forecasting perspective. These are all going to have higher risk factors than currently producing fields as well. They do not have a track record of performance for us to gauge expected decline rates. You know, we have expectations from the operators going into it, but how things work out in production history oftentimes varies from our expectations before we have that production history. They are, however, all known discoveries with identifiable operators. So every one of these fields, we can all say we have discovery wells, we have plans of development for just some point in time between now and 10 years in the future, we expect them to come online. And they all require major investments to do so. So if we take a look at the map, and we're going to, I'm just going to flow here naturally from west to east, the 15 North Slope major projects that we have this year on federal lands is Willow, the Willow development. You can see it in red text to denote federal properties. And then as we go from west to east, you have the Colville River Unit Narwhal CD8 pad, the Horseshoe Stirrup development, which would be a new field. I believe Horseshoe straddles both state and federal lands, so it's a bit of a mix. The Pika Unit development, which is all on state lands, Pika Unit Phase 2 in Kwakamitkuk, those are all to be operated by Santos Energy. And then we go over to Mustang, slightly further east of that, just south of the Kwakamitkuk, that is now operated by Finex Energy as of, I believe it was publicly announced that Finex would be acquiring it in October of 2023. I think in December of 2023 is when that operatorship took effect. So Mustang is now operated by Finex and no longer operated by the Alaska Industrial Development Association. What's that?
Export Authority.
Thank you. the Nunatoraq project is going back to the ConocoPhillips leases. So we've talked about that one earlier, the new pad there. The same thing with Millie Point Raven Pad is a new pad within the Millie Point unit. And then we shift south of Prudhoe Bay. There are three developments that we have listed: Theta West, the Alkid development, and the Talitha development, operated by Great Bear Pantheon. And then going back north along the coast, again on federal properties, you see the Liberty development is included in this year's forecast. And then shifting to the farthest east, we have two projects within Point Thompson: the Point Thompson Unit Expansion Project, and then within Point Thompson, the Sourdough Project, which is operated by Jade Energy. I should mention that Point Thompson is operated by Hillcorp. So same unit, two different operators for two different projects. I did mention earlier that there were some changes due to what we kind of viewed as some federal actions last year. What you do not see on this year is neither the Umiat development nor the Smith Bay development. Those have both crossed some federal, some very large areas well, not only are they remote and they cross some federal properties, we didn't view them as having a realistic delivery of being online within the next 10 years. So they're on our watch list for future years, you know, to see what developments do occur with those. But those were two projects that we had highlighted in years past that are now gone from this year's forecast. All right, so now that we know what components build the production forecast, we're going to start talking about the production forecast results themselves. In this chart, we're going to start with the fall 2023 North Slope annualized forecast. We do have the total state forecast on the next slide. But for the North Slope, this is the same chart we saw earlier with the axis for the fiscal year, annual average daily oil production in barrels of oil per day going from 0 to 1 million barrels. The fiscal year is going from 2024 to 2033, so a 10-year forecast. And what you see on the DNR forecast is the annualized average daily statewide production is 478,000 barrels of oil per day. For the North Slope itself, it's 470,000 barrels of oil per day. The range of possible outcomes we see for this year on the low end is 422,000 barrels of oil per day, and the high end is 519,000 barrels of oil per day. So that's just for fiscal year 2024 itself. Going into the long term, so we use this chart for a couple things. The long-term forecast, we like to take a look at our official forecast compared to the operator forecast, just to get a gauge of how are our internal calculations working out versus what operators are expecting. And you can see in fiscal year 2024, we actually have very close alignment. The Department of Natural Resources does not use the operator forecast. We actually do our entire process, build everything up, take a look at how we think North Slope production and Alaska production is going to go, and then we compare that to the operator's forecast. So for this year, in fiscal year 2024, the operator and our official forecast have extremely close alignment. And again, that does not include new future projects for the operator's forecast. So we were happy to see that hopefully we're going to get very close to this official forecast for the year. We do expect some differences through time, though. You know, the operator's forecast, I can't tell you how they build theirs. I can tell you how we build ours. So I'm not surprised to see differences as the years go by. And again, as the new production from major projects come online, we do see that divergence from the official forecast to the operator forecast. One of the large assumptions for all of this that I like to caveat these slides with is that our internal outlook, the Division of Oil and Gas, Department of Natural Resources, official forecast does require operator plans to remain unchanged. So if either a major investment is made or a major change in activity, a reduction occurs, you know, the forecast would subsequently have to change as well. So we have a set of assumptions going into it. And then we update our process twice a year. So we do this process in the fall and again in the spring. So as we know more information, we can get you the most up-to-date information possible. Are there any questions on this slide?
Yes, on FY24, the current year, are we up in production or down in production?
As compared to last year's forecast?
Yeah.
We are down.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, not so much last year's forecast, but last year's results. Actual.
Okay.
So we're down on our production's down. Do you know roughly how far it's down year to date? Or
Senator Stedman, again, for the record, Travis Peltier. I'd have to go take a look at to see how fiscal year 24 is in terms of how far we are down compared to fiscal year 2023. I know our forecast values use actual data through the end of November. We have, unfortunately, the way our database works, we don't actually have December values until mid-January, so I wouldn't have enough time to turn that around to you. So our forecast right now with what we put out in fall of 2023 and actual production through the fall of 2023 should have strong alignment because we do use that 5 months of actual data incorporated into the forecast. How actual production has changed since then, you'll have to forgive me. I'll have to get back to you on that.
If you can get back to the committee on actual production year to date relative to 23, because I think we're down 4.87% actual production year to date.
Okay.
So we can keep track of that. It's nice to look forward in the projection, but it's also nice to look back a few years and see where we're at. And then the question is going into from this date forward, the next year and a half, where are we at? In the projection and if we're moving up or down. It's nice to look forward 10 years, but when we do our budgets, we're going to be concentrating over the next 2 or 3 years.
For the record, Travis Peltier. So I'm going to move on to the final. This is our final technical slide with charts. And here we have the Alaska statewide annualized forecast for the fall of 2023. So this is the expected case with production categories. On the chart on the left, this is fiscal year annual average daily oil production. Scale here is 0 to 700,000 barrels of oil per day. We do have the three categories for CP, which stands for current production, UD, which is under development, and then the UE in gray, which is under evaluation. Again, just to refresh what the orange wedge, the under development is, this is going to be new wells drilled in existing fields for this year. So I will call this infill drilling. You'll see the importance of continued activity within our existing fields. What we do have overlaid on here as well is the spring 2023 forecast. The spring 2023 forecast is a 10-year forecast. So it starts in fiscal year 23. Naturally, that year gets cut off. So what we have here is the remaining 9 years of the spring 2023 forecast overlaid on this year's forecast. So we can see the difference between the two. When you had talked about production decline, I thought you were discussing or going to ask about why we have a difference here in fiscal year 24. And to talk about that, actually, it's probably a good segue. What you see here is we do see production in fiscal year 24 in this forecast to be in total less than what we had shared in the spring of 2023. And this did have to do predominantly with some challenges we saw on new development drilling for the new pad that we talked about in the National Petroleum Reserve A. There was a pretty large difference in expectations between actuals and what our internal expectation was. And that was about three quarters of that wedge difference right there for fiscal year 2024 is just from that. The other big differences do come in with development drilling across the North Slope on various fields where we had expected wells to produce more than they had. There was the we had the correct number of wells drilled roughly, but the wells themselves just didn't quite produce at the rate in total that we had expected them to. So we've addressed those deficiencies in the fall of 2023 forecast, and that's why you see a lower production rate as compared to our expectations from the spring of 2023. One positive too that we see again is Commissioner Boyle had mentioned earlier on. You know, you do see that with the continued positive news out of our Willow project, continued development of Pica, the continued confidence such that Pica Phase 2 and Quokka are going to be coming to the state of Alaska as well. You do see towards the end of our forecast period with this higher chance, higher confidence, those projects do materialize at the end of the forecast period in a significantly higher production rate by fiscal year 2032. I believe that's roughly a 66,000 barrel of oil per day change from the spring of 2023, the final data point that you have there from what our current forecast is. And then again, our final year of this year's forecast in 2033 sees production rates climbing to 633,000 barrels of oil per day. The chart on the right here is the Alaska production forecast. This is just that under evaluation category just shared here. The axis is the same as the chart on the left, so you can see how material these continued investments are to the state of Alaska, both, you know, infill drilling within existing fields and then the new developments that are coming. You can see a pretty large increase starting in the 2026 timeframe, predominantly driven by Pica Phase 1, and then you can start seeing in the 2030 timeframe another large increase predominantly driven by the Willow project.
Okay, are you done with the slide?
Yes, sir.
So when you get back to the committee, you know, we have got published data that the department puts out on price per day and volume per day. So that's where the earlier question came in, is the production decline year to date compared to FY23 of that 4.87%, and that's through published through January 15th. So that's pretty current. But that reduction seems to be, or decline seems to be, fairly linear. So if you could break that down to the fields, where it came from, which fields. And the reason I'm asking these questions is we're laying the groundwork when we look into ledge finance to run our sensitivity models. We're much more sensitive to price than we are to volume, but we still want to get volume as tight as we can and understand what fields are moving down. We'll most likely in the next several weeks have the industry talk about what they think's coming in the fields, you know, so we can try to benchmark where we're at as we look forward, because we're talking about production and things looking good on production. Things don't look quite the same when we tie it into revenue, and we have to operate in the revenue world. So that's the basis for these questions. But if you could, and I don't care if you cut it off on the 15th, because that happens to be the latest published data this morning, or you cut it off 1st of January. I'm not that concerned about that. Just that there is a significant movement in volume, and we need to understand where that's coming from, to have that conversation, what it's going to look like over the next 18 months, which would be the finishing up FY24 and the FY25 budget that we're starting to work on. So that's kind of the background for the public, you know, listening to these questions. It's part of the mosaic that's going to be put together.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is John Boyle, Commissioner. We'll be happy to work with the committee to provide the data in a format and in a timing sequence that helps your folks refine your guys' forecasts. We'll
we'll certainly be happy to work with you on that.
Yeah, this is good information, the 10-year forecast, but we're going to look at all that in the 10-year plan, which makes us go broke, and we're going to compress that down to the next 2 or 3 years so we don't run out of cash and we can operate. So our window is going to be much tighter than coming up with some physical direction for the state for 10 years, because if you go broke in year 3, year 10 doesn't matter. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Mr. Commissioner. Can you provide my office with the leases that exist on gas in the North Slope and any new development? What has happened in activity on gas development for the last 5 years? And do you see any changes in the companies on their approach to bring gas to Tidewater? So if you can provide that information to me, my office would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
And then Senator Hoffman will disperse it amongst the committee members. Yeah. Any other questions on this slide before we go to the next one? Next slide, slide 16, the one you've been looking for.
Slide 17 is that one. For the record, Travis Peltier. So this is our final slide here before our thank you slide. For the fall 2023 production forecast summary, we, the DNR, the Department of Natural Resources, we continue to use the best information available that we have to generate a production outlook for all the fields within the state. And our focus is to generate a near-term forecast and a realistic long-term forecast. The fall 2023 forecast is a static view on production, so we will not update it. It's published. It is set. We will update it, however, again in the spring. So that'll be the spring 2023 update, and that's to incorporate any additional updates we get from the operators. Along with that, we do get an updated price outlook that we use for our production forecasts. We'll use a new price outlook for the spring when the time comes. The DNR's fall 2023 outlook shows a mean annual production of approximately 480 to 500,000 barrels of oil per day over the next few years of the outlook period. And it increases towards the middle and the end towards 630,000 barrels of oil per day. And that's just based off the current snapshot of our operators' plans. Production estimates Production estimates from projects under evaluation account for several technical, commercial factors and execution risks. And this is to account for uncertainty on individual project and individual production delivery of each project.
That's it?
This slide's short.
Mr. Commissioner, do you have any final comments?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, John Boyle, Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources, for the record. I appreciate the Chair's counsel on providing you information on that maybe narrower time frame to really help in your budget forecasting models. We've heard that message, and we will be happy to work with the committee there. Again, just to sum up, I believe that there's reasons for optimism. We are very excited to see the new and different operators that we see coming to the North Slope. I think having that competition is good. As we all know, a number of the companies that operate currently on the North Slope, many of them have global portfolios, or they have portfolios that extend, of course, across the United States. And having a mix of companies means that while some companies may be more focused on investing or pursuing developments in other parts of the world, other companies may be more focused on developing here in Alaska. And I think we're seeing that with a number of the new operators that we have. So, of course, we welcome that new interest in development. And I do want to just underscore one point that I didn't hit as much on initially, which is we all also are, though, evaluating risks that we see from federal policy decisions. And I do want to call out the MPRA proposed rulemaking that BLM has announced. I think a number of members of the committee are aware of that process, but we are seeing actions by the federal government that would present a major hindrance to future development particularly within the MPRA, but also in other areas where there's a nexus of federal permitting that may even overlay on state land. So we're very aware of those efforts. The DNR will continue to work with other agencies in the state to assert our state's rights and to continue to fight to promote a healthy investment climate on the North Slope. We're also taking a very hard look at the post-Sackett decision-making of the U.S. Supreme Court on what constitutes a water of the United States. I think there are areas of the North Slope that we would argue fall outside of a water of the United States, and we will be looking to, again, find opportunities there to limit that federal nexus so that we can provide more permitting certainty for some of our operators. So, good news. I think if we continue the course as we keep coming back to the table, I think our forecasts will continue to improve and provide that measure of optimism for the state that we do have a lot of investment and activity that will make a material difference not only to this committee and to the state and certainly to the residents of the North Slope, which will also stand to benefit from that new activity. So we appreciate the committee's time.
Any final questions from committee members? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To follow up on your comments about the committee's responsibility to look at revenue and how it impacts our total presentation to provide service to the people of Alaska. Commissioner, could you provide my office on graph three, can you provide my office with the production for the next 10 years for Hillcorp? Everyone knows in the building and in the state that they had purchased BP and are now a LLC. So I would like to get an idea of if these fields were not sold by BP, what the calculation of revenue by year would have been to the state of Alaska. I think that's some interesting information, not only for this committee, but for the people of Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Hoffman, through the chair. We'll be happy to provide the production data for you, and we can work with the Department of Revenue as it comes to maybe calculating some of the revenue projections from production from those particular areas, as you mentioned.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I think that'll be dominated by Prudhoe Bay. So I think that'll get into the... We can also, Senator Hoffman, relay that same question to Department of Revenue tomorrow.
Yep. Okay.
Because they're tied together. Any other final questions? I'd like to go ahead and thank the department for coming forward again every year to come and talk about this. As the commissioner mentioned, things look a lot brighter, especially with all of national headwinds on oil and gas. We've done well, relatively speaking, what we have to deal with. So we do have a bright future in our oil basin. So tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., we're going to continue on. We're going to have the Department of Revenue come in, and we're going to try to put the dollars on the production and impacts. And again, after legislative finance presents, after that, following days, we'll bring them all back to answer questions and tie things together and then proceed on to the expense side of the budget. With that, we are adjourned at 10:19 a.m.